Okay, welcome to class number 11, I believe. The Saraswati invocation, which we didn't record, but it's in your notes in the 40-page handout, the big, long 40-page handout, which has lots of stuff in it. It has that Saraswati invocation. So in the chat window, why were you guys writing 12 in the chat window? What's that refer to? Oh yeah, class number 12. Great. Okay, we're in class number 12, yes. So let's look at verse 3. Aren't we on verse 3 of Sri Guru Paduka Panchakam? Hotragni, Hautragni, Havishya Hotar, Homadi Sarvakriti Bhasamanam, Yad Brahma Tadbodha Vitarini Bhyam, Namo Namah Sri Guru Paduka Bhyam. Okay. So, let's break this down. Now this verse is, it's a little weird because it's the, you know, overall it's definitely a tantric hymn or a hymn from the tantric period. But this verse is talking about this Vedic stuff, you know, these Vedic priests. So what we've got here is the Hotragni, the Hotar fire and the Hautar fire, the Hotragni, and the fire offering and the priest and the fire itself and so on and so forth. Okay, so let's see how this translation renders it. So at the end of that line, sarvakriti, all aspects or all forms, that's compounded. That's all one long compound, actually. The whole line is one long compound. So, bhasamana is the present participle. You guys haven't learned that yet, but it's the present participle form. So, bhasamana, shining or shining forth or appearing or manifesting as sarvakriti, all aspects of what? Of the Vedic fire sacrifice. So, remember that the hymn is to lineage transmission. And indeed, it's perfectly true to say that the Vedic fire sacrifice wouldn't exist without lineage transmission, both oral and written, from teacher to pupil, from fathers to sons, for many, 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 many generations, not from anyone but fathers to sons, because unlike the tantric tradition, the Vedic tradition is 100% patriarchal. Transmission is only from males to males of the Vedic tradition. So, like in this translation, it's got shine. Well, it should be, it's a present participle. It's literally shining forth as all forms of the Vedic sacrifice, such as the specific kind of Vedic fire called the Hotragni, and the other kind of Vedic fire called the Hautragni. The oblation being offered, the Havishya, the priest, the Hotar. Okay, Hota in the nominative singular, that's nominative singular of Hotar, with a vocalic R. You haven't learned that. It's the R, it's the vocalic R stem. Also used for Pitar, father, which becomes Pitta in the nominative singular. So the Homa, the act of making oblation. This translation so far is pretty good. And so on, adi, which you're probably used to in the meaning of primal or primordial or first, but it also means et cetera at the end of a compound or a string of terms. It means et cetera because it literally means having these as their first. Having these things as the first elements, and the list goes on. So it's used to mean simply et cetera. And we also had it in the Saraswati invocation, right? Yad Brahma, no, that's this one. Brahma Chuta Shankara. Didn't we have it? Ya Brahma Chuta Shankaradi Vritibir, right? No, it's Shankara Prabhritibir. But that means the same thing. Prabhriti, Adi, same thing. We didn't have the Adi there, sorry. But we had another parallel word that means and so on. Okay, Prabhriti there means those three gods and so on. And here we have a similar term, but it's Adi. Okay, so that's that first line. Second line, Yad Brahma Tad Bodha Vitarini Bhyam. Okay, so here we have a relative correlative, and I don't think you guys have learned that yet, but relative correlative, it's relatively easy once you understand that in English we always invert our relatives and correlatives. So we say that which, for example, we say that person which, or no, we would say that person who is wearing the black shirt, or that person, or that tree which is over there. You see, we put the correlative first, but in Sanskrit you always put the relative first. So like, which tree is over there? That's the tree I'll meet you under, which in English sounds weird, okay? But that's how it works in Sanskrit, which, and it actually makes more logical sense. Which tree over there, which tree is over there? That's the tree I'll meet you under. So it's which that instead of that which, if that makes sense. So Yad Brahma Tad Bodha Vitarini Bhyam. So which literally, which Yad is the absolute Brahma, Tad that Bodha awareness, Vitarini Bhyam is granted. Okay, so agreeing with Paduka Bhyam there, Vitarini Bhyam agreeing with Paduka Bhyam. So the sandals, again, the sandals representing lineage transmission, the sandals are Vitarini kind of sandals. So Vitarini, let me bring up the dictionary so I can get the different meanings of that, because it has other meanings as well. Oopsie. Okay, it's from a root, so it's from vitarin, which is a possessive suffix of vitara. I wonder if we have a typo. Is it actually bodhavitarini? Let me see. Okay, not in the Devanagari. Just give me a second. And so vitarin is a possessive noun, like yogin. A yogin is one who has yoga, right? So vitarin from vitara, and vitara means, it means transmitting, it means leading, one along a path, right? From the verbal root ter, T vocalic R, ter, to which has a bunch of meanings, like to save, to rescue. Let's see if we can look up the root with the prefix viter. Okay, it's not coming up with. Oh, here it is, sorry. Viter, long vocalic R. This is the verbal root of the word. V-I-T, long vocalic R. Vocalic R, the R with a dot under it and a bar on top. That's the R we're talking about. Viter, to pass across or through, to bring away, carry off, to give away, to grant, bestow, to offer someone a seat is viter with asana. So if you use the verb viter with asana, that means to offer someone an asana, a seat. Okay? So those are the meanings of viter, which becomes a noun, vitara, which becomes a possessive noun, vitarin. But then that possessive noun needs to be a feminine to agree with paduka, feminine. So vitarini, just like yogini. So everyone, I hope, knows by now that it's not pronounced yogini. It's yogini. And here it's vitarini. Okay? So, in other words, these sandals, these padukas, these symbolic or metaphorical sandals, vitarini, give, grant, bestow, or transmit, tadbodha, that knowledge or that awareness, right? Bodha, awareness, from the root bud, to be aware or to awaken. So which kind of awareness are we talking about? That's why we have the relative clause, yad brahma, that awareness which is of the absolute, okay? Literally, it's saying yad brahma, which is the absolute, tad bodha, that awareness. It grants that awareness, which is the absolute awareness. It grants that knowledge or wisdom, which is the absolute knowledge. That's what the phrase means. So it's not literally knowledge of that, which would be a genitive, right? It's literally, it grants that knowledge, which is the Brahma knowledge, the absolute knowledge. Here where Brahma doesn't, here Brahma is the neuter. So it's Brahman in the nominative, it's not in the nominative, it's compounded. Is it compound? It must be compounded because it's either in the neuter nominative or it doesn't have an ending, in which case it's compounded. Okay? So Brahman in the neuter is a neuter noun. The absolute is a neuter noun as opposed to Brahma, the creator deity, which is a masculine proper noun. So Brahman, neuter noun, the absolute in its nominative singular form is Brahma, which is what we have here. And it's also what we have in the Guru Shloka, Gurur Brahma. There it's the masculine noun. The Guru is the creator, okay? The Guru is all the deities is what that verse is saying, right? But it says it by saying the Guru is Brahma, masculine creator deity. The Guru is Vishnu. And it's declined in the verse. So it's literally Gurur Vishnur. So you can tell if someone knows Sanskrit instantly when they recite this verse, because if they don't know Sanskrit, they say Guru Brahma, Guru Vishnu. But if they know Sanskrit, you'll hear an R, Gurur Vishnur, right? Because the R is the Visarga of the nominative singular ending changing to R for Sunday reasons. Everyone knows the verse I'm talking about, right? It's like the most famous shloka ever. So it's absolutely not Guru Vishnu. It's declined, nominative singular, Visarga changes to R. So Guruhu, Vishnuhu changes to Gurur, Vishnur because of the following voiced sound. That's normal Visarga Sandhi. So Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnur, Gurur Devo, Maheshwaraha. Where Maheshwara means Shiva, right? The great God. Which that term dates from the Shaiva age, the 600 or so years where Shaivism was the dominant religion of the subcontinent. Shiva became known as Mahadeva, the great God, Maheshwara, the great Lord. And he still has those names, even though Vaishnavism became slightly more prominent. So, Gurur Devo Maheshwaraha. Guru is the God, is the great God, Shiva. Guru Sakshat, or in some recensions of the verse, Gurur Eva, which is a weaker, it doesn't have as much meaning. It's not the recension I would prefer. So we have two different versions of this verse. Gurur Eva, where Eva is emphasis, or Guru with the Visarga. Sakshat, meaning before your very eyes, in person, in an embodied form. Much stronger sentence that with that reading. Guru Sakshat Para or Param Brahma. Para Brahma if it's compounded, Param Brahma if it's not compounded. And there we have the neuter nominative singular. So it's the absolute. We already had Brahma in the first line, right? So Guru Sakshat Param Brahma, the Guru is the supreme absolute before your very eyes. I mean, for that matter, so is everything, you know, but let's not mince words or split hairs right now. So Guru Sakshat Param Brahma, and that's the Brahma we have here, the nominative singular, or it could be compounded form because it would look the same, but usually you don't compound relatives and correlatives. But anyway, I don't want to spend the whole class on this. So, but you get the meaning, right? So, Vitarini Bhyam, feminine possessive noun, agreeing with Paduka Bhyam, agreeing in case, number, and gender, because it's functioning as an adjective. So, reverence, namo namaha, reverence again and again to those sandals of Sri Guru, which are the Vitarani, which are the Vitarans, which are the bestowers of that knowledge, which is the supreme knowledge, or that wisdom or awareness, which is supreme, which is the absolute, okay? Any questions on that verse? Obviously you haven't learned some of the grammar, but any questions on what you can recognize there? You can unmute yourself to ask. This is what we prefer for the video, is that you unmute yourself to ask questions, not type them unless you must type them for some reason.
Okay, I have a question, Harish. This is Manoj. So when you talk about the Sandhi, Gurur, Brahma, would the Sandhi be, would the R sound come only after U plus Visarga?
Correct.
With an U, okay.
So there's different rules for Visarga following A or A. So let me type it in the chat window. A and ah Visarga have one set of rules, and then all other vowels Visarga have a different set of rules. So for example, u, i, like these, those have their own, those have different Visarga Sunday rules, and we'll learn all those in time. So anyway, if it's a non-a vowel, if it's u or e, then the visarga changes to an r before a following voiced sound. Visarga does never changes if the following sound is unvoiced. If the following sound is a k or any unvoiced sound, it doesn't change. But if it's a voiced sound, it's going to change. So in this, so it changes to r after a non-a vowel. Okay. Now, going back to these earlier questions, yes, vitaren here, or vitara, same root as avatara, or avatar, in the English, adoption, right? From Sanskrit, avatara, to Hindi, avatar, to English, avatar, right? That's the linguistic, the borrowing sequence there. Same root, ava plus ter, in this case, a different prefix, okay? Where an avatar is a breakthrough manifestation of the divine, you know, the God has literally broken through into our dimension, because avatar means literally to descend down, or to cross over and down into our realm, as it were, okay? So avatar is used in the computing world for like the little character you have in an online environment, which actually makes sense with the Sanskrit usage, because it's pushing yourself into, breaking through into another dimension, and appearing in a different form there, in a kind of lower dimension. So it actually works. Just coincidentally, it's just happens to work with the Sanskrit. Can someone type for Sean that verse we just, or copy and paste that verse we just went over, that Guru Shloka, Guru Brahma, etc., etc.? Okay, so I don't have a link for the translation of that verse because we were just doing it on the fly. Now, let's go back to the Sri Guru Paduka Panchakam verse just for a moment, because for some reason, for whatever reason, might probably just meter, the poet has now changed from plural to dual. So the translation here is correct. This says the two shoes, two sandals. For whatever reason, before we had a plural, paduka bhyaha, and now we have a dual, paduka bhyam, so it is indeed the two sandals. So perhaps then what the poet is doing is he's shifted his emphasis from the whole lineage to his guru in particular, okay? Because now we have two sandals, not a bunch of sandals, more than two. So that's good to notice. And then let me just paste in here from this site I found the translation of the previous two shlokas that or verses that we already did, because it turns out this translation is mostly right. So that's cool. And it puts the Sanskrit in after every single word. So that's really useful for you guys. Okay. I haven't examined it yet to be sure that it has no mistakes, so don't assume that, but it looks pretty solid. This isn't even a site. This is somebody's Facebook post. Okay. This fellow, Agnivesh Gurudev. It's just a random Facebook post that happened to come up. So we'll track that down later, okay? So let's move on to your questions on Maurer 3, Egenes 3, Egenes 4, you know, wherever you are, let's just go to that. Let's just go straight to questions. We don't have time to try to like go through everything. Yeah, we have the link, that link that Scott just put, that's the one for the, for some reason it's not working for me, but that's the one for the full transliteration and Portuguese translation. And then from this Facebook post from Agnivesh Gurudev is the English translation that I've pasted in the chat window. Oh, okay. Yeah, it's not coming up for me for some reason. Oh, there it is. I just didn't scroll down far enough. Oh, see, I liked the Portuguese translation because then it made you guys work harder. Now you have the English here. Let's see what he has. Ha! Okay, so forget the Facebook post. That guy was just copying it from here without giving credit to Gabrielle, the translator, which sucks because it's work to translate. You know, yes, you're quoting some ancient thing that's part of your heritage, but you didn't translate it, dude. Anyway, so yeah, he just copied from here. So this is Gabrielle Pradipika's site. Okay, moving on. Questions on Maurer or Egenes? Did we finish Maurer 3 last time, or did we not finish that story? I know I posted the answer key.
Well, you translated the end of it for us. But I don't. We didn't ask you questions about the translating from English to Sanskrit part.
Okay, we got to the end of the story. Okay. So, whatever you guys want to, just wherever you have questions, whether it's English to Sanskrit or over in Egenes, wherever you want to go. Come on, no questions? Okay, any question related to Sanskrit whatsoever? While I eat Girl Scout cookies.
Okay, well, I was wondering if maybe we could just do one of the English to Sanskrit sentences from Maurer 3 with you, just to see how you do it, because
let me bring up Maurer 3 then.
Okay.
Okay. I mean, you know, the more you've memorized forms, the easier it is, of course. It's like not very easy if you haven't memorized paradigms very much. But let me...
So it's page 74.
Yeah. Okay.
Harish, can we maybe talk a bit about... the two tenses, well, one tense, the imperfect.
Yeah.
And also this chapter is on the, I don't know how you pronounce that, gerund, the having, gerund. Having done something. Yeah, gerund.
Yeah, gerund.
Yeah, gerund, okay. Just maybe to go through some of the rules for how we, you know, how declension works on imperfect tenses from the verb, actual present tense verb, and also for gerund, the three forms.
Right. So both imperfect, meaning past tense, that's just a grammatical term that should be dispensed with by now, but past tense and present tense, present indicative and past imperfect, those are finite verbs, finite verbs almost always come at the end of a sentence. And if the speaker wants verbal action before the finite verb at the end of the sentence, he or she is usually going to use a gerund or other forms, but a gerund is very common. And a gerund is indeclinable. So it makes life much easier you only conjugate the finite verb that comes at the end. So you get to say, you know, having done A, having done B, having done C, and those are all fixed forms. And then you say, I did D, and that's a conjugated finite verb. Okay. So whoever, this is the key. This is what you need to remember, write down, memorize. Whoever is doing the action of the finite verb at the end of the sentence, that is the agent of all the gerunds prior to the finite verb, because gerunds are dependent on the finite verb, okay? Again, they don't change their form on the basis of that verb. They have a fixed form, but you have to assume the person doing the action of the finite verb at the end is the person doing the action of the gerund also. Okay, so let's look at English to Sanskrit, page 74, sentence 1. An ascetic, having meditated for a long time, went to a village for alms. Alms means free food given to holy men. That's like an old English word, right? So, dirgham kalam dhyatva. Dhyatva is the, oh man, I can't paste it because Microsoft Word butchers Devanagari every time. It's been like 20 years that I've been in the field and Word still butchers it. Pages doesn't butcher Devanagari. So if I see, the thing is that the document, if you paste Devanagari into Word, this is how people get their tattoos wrong. I'm not kidding. When they take the thing from the internet, the Devanagari, they paste it into Word to print it out or whatever. Word butchers the Devanagari. They go and get their tattoo, and it's a horrible mess. Okay, don't do that. Word cannot handle Devanagari. Let me see if I can open the Word doc in Pages. Yes, see, Pages, Mac Pages kicks ass when it comes to Devanagari. Okay, I can paste it in. Well, Scott, I don't know how that's happening, because every time I put Devanagari in Word, it messes it up. You are a computer genius, maybe. I don't know what setting you did. Ah, Alicia has a Marjataha. Sanskrit for cat. Marjata. If I address the cat in the vocative, eighth case. Hey, Marjata. It looked up. Cool. Okay, there's the Devanagari. Dirgham kalam dhyatva. Yeah, so Scott, you should teach people how to do that. You should have your own class here. Let's just keep it this for a moment. Dirgham kalam dhyatva. Having meditated, so from the root dhyai, to meditate, which never appears as dhyai, but it's irregular root. Dhya, like as in dhyana, meditation. But twa is a standard gerund ending, right? There's only three gerund endings, and they are always the same for a given verb. So dhya, meditate, always takes twa, gerund ending. Oh, I remember. this is how you, so if the gerund always is in toi, TV long A, if there's no prefix to the verb. If there's no prefix, it always takes toi. So dia toi, having meditated, how long? Dirgam kalam, for a long time, where that's just in the neuter nominative singular, okay? It's just neuter nominative singular. Having meditated for a long time, right? Dirgam kalam dia toi. An ascetic or a tapasa, a dedicated or full-time spiritual practitioner. Ascetic, yes, but nobody uses the word ascetic in English anymore, so it's kind of problematic. Anyway, so let me paste the right thing here. An ascetic went to the village for alms, but in Sanskrit you would say it in this order. For the sake of alms, bhikshartham, an ascetic, a tapasaha, to the village, gramam, went, agachat. That's normal word order in Sanskrit. You can't, you know, you just learn that through usage, through practice. So here's the phrase. Bhikshartham tapasaha gramam agachat. For the sake of alms, an ascetic went to the village. Now, there's the finite verb, agachat, imperfect or past tense, he went. Right? But you know again that the gerund, dhyatva, having meditated, has to be the same actor as the finite verb. So it's the ascetic who meditated and it's the ascetic who went to the village. Right? And you don't have to say having meditated. You could say after meditating for a long time, because that means the exact same thing, right? The important thing with translation is that you understand the meaning. You don't have to translate exactly, you know, the same way always. So having meditated or after meditating for a long time, ascetic went to the village for alms. And having walked or having gone ever so slowly on the side of the road.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Jump in.
I just want to make sure. So you said dirgam galam is in the neuter nominative singular?
Correct.
Wait, isn't it accusative?
No, because the neuter looks exactly the same in the nominative as in the accusative. So neuter, the accusative takes over the nominative as well, only in neuter nouns.
Okay, so that's what I was confused
about. Any neuter noun always has the same accusative and nominative, so you just go by context. But in this case, it really doesn't matter. In this case, you can think of it as nominative or accusative. It's the same thing. And you see, it really doesn't matter for the meaning.
So, but that was my question, is how do we decline things coming after a gerund? Are they objects of the gerund? Or, like, how do we decide?
Yes. They can be objects of, you can think of it as an object of the gerund. Yeah. So, dirgam kalam dhyatwa. You can, and maybe, see, I'm... my grammar after so many years is a little bit more intuitive than me remembering all the rules. So it may be that a grammarian would say, no, this is an accusative, but you know, it looks the same, but it is an accusative according to the grammatical rules. Dirgam kalam dhyatva, having meditated for a long time.
So we don't know yet. Okay. Then after agachat, that's a verb of action, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
So it should be two accusatives, right? The village and alms should both be in the accusative.
And they are.
Okay.
Because there's a spelling error in bhikshartham. Right. So Manoj caught that. Thank you so much. Bhikshar. tum. So that's the word. For the sake of alms, in the it's so bhiksha, alms, artha, for the sake of, when it's in compound, artha is a very flexible word, but when it's in compound, at the end of the compound, it means for the sake of, right? So bhikshartha, for the sake of alms. Now again, grammatically, are you supposed to consider this an accusative that's an object of the finite verb, or are you supposed to consider this as a neuter nominative singular? I don't know, because that's so far back in my past, because you never have to make that functionally. Functionally, it doesn't matter, you know?
Okay, and my other question was, if this wasn't a verb of action, like if these weren't a double accusative, then would you a village be dative or locative?
No, verbs, and remember, verbs of motion always take accusative.
Right.
A verb of motion like gatwa is from gum to go. It's an irregular gerund, forms gatwa, meaning having gone, right? So it's a verb of motion, so it must take an accusative, which is gramam.
But let's say it was some other verb, like not a verb of motion, just some other verb.
Right.
To a village, what case would that be? Would it be dative or locative?
Well, but you would never have to a village that wasn't a verb of motion. If you had for the sake of a village, then that would be dative, right? So for the benefit of the village, you could say gramaya, right? Dative. But to the village is always going to be, it's always going to be the object of a verb of motion. So it's always going to be accusative. Yeah. But, you know, the thing is, it's just much easier to translate into Sanskrit after you've been exposed to more Sanskrit, you know? So, okay, so yeah, so Manoj has caught two spelling errors, three spelling errors. No, the third is not a spelling error, Manoj. That's correct. Agachat. He went, okay? Because agachat would be he came. Yeah. Okay, so two spelling errors, both having to do with long, or no, the one was the wrong sibilant and the other was the wrong vowel. Okay. So, bhikshartham tapasah gramam agachat, he went to the village for the sake of alms, and then having gone very, very slowly along the side of the road, because it's hot, presumably, he's hot and going slow. So, margasya, of the road, parshwe, on the side, shanaihi, shanaihi, slowly, slowly, eva, very. Yeah. That's another spelling error in the Devanagari. Margasya. I'll just transliterate it without spelling errors. Parshwe shanaihi. Shanaihi. Eva. Very. Gatwa. There it is in transliteration. Having gone very slowly on the side of the road. Right, he just used the verb, I'm just using the verb go, because it's so common, rather than a specific verb that means walked, which would be like chal, the verb chal, to walk, or to move. Having seen a banyan tree, so we need another gerund. So there we go, in Devanagari, nyagroda padapam. Dershtwa, having seen, dershtwa, nyagroda padapam, a banyan tree, remember padapa, literally foot drinker, kenning for tree, having seen a nyagroda type tree, meaning a banyan tree, yeah, here comes the thing about this, about the sun, stricken by the heat of the sun. So we would say like this, overwhelmed or afflicted or overcome by the heat of the sun. Okay, so aditasya tapena akrantaha, akrantaha, overcome. Now this is a past passive participle, which I don't think he's taught you yet. He's just listing it in the vocab as if it's a vocab word. But here's the thing, you guys. You don't have to memorize as much vocab as it seems like you do, because it's just that he hasn't taught you all the forms. So akrantaha, akranta is in the vocab as a word, and it is a word, but it's also specifically a past passive participle. Oh, is drishtva spelled wrong? Okay, so then that means I have problems in both pages and word. Yeah, drishtva needs a virama or a halant, or to be spelled like Scott did it in the window there. So having seen the banyan tree stricken by the heat of the sun, he sat down there, and the pages has actually changed my word order for some random reason. That's really weird. The words are coming out in a different order in pages. Okay. Tatra nyashidat. He sat down there. Finite verb. Nyashidat. It's the imperfect. It's the imperfect form of nisid. Nyashidat. Yeah, English to Sanskrit's just harder. There's no way around that. Okay. I think you guys probably shouldn't do English to Sanskrit till you have some more facility. I'll post the answer key if I can get it to appear correctly. I'll post the answer key for the English to Sanskrit just so you can practice. Well, you can practice going back and forth between them, right? And that you can get some practice that way. And I think that's very good practice. Yeah, upahata for stricken, sure, yes. Okay. So Scott, why don't you, I'll post this and then you post what you have. And, okay, Manoj, send me that link to the answer key to Maurer website and we'll see if it's better than what I have. Or maybe just without typos. Okay, I gotta catch the train. I'm sorry to make it a short class, but we will we'll continue next time. And you don't have a transliteration of Maurer 4, I think, but so we should perhaps focus on Egenes for a little bit. Also, because we need to get up to Egenes 9 to be on track with Maurer in terms of the concepts that are getting introduced. And it really, I know it seems crazy, but it really is better to have two different Sanskrit primers, or even three, because the very same thing that you can't understand when Maurer explains it, you'll understand when Egenes explains it, but also vice versa. Egenes tries to be super simple, but we've seen with learnsanskrit.org that doesn't always work. You need to have resources for seeing the same thing explained differently. So, you know, Egenes, Maurer, and Goldman, that's ideal. The only reason we haven't started Goldman is because I still haven't had time to post the Sunday rules. Okay, so you guys use that website, that copy it now before the chat window disappears. Manoj has posted the Maurer website with answer keys. So avail yourself of that, and we will circle back. Yeah, it's not mobile friendly, but copy that link, and we will circle back on Sunday so that I can make this train to Brooklyn. It's not the last train to Brooklyn, but it's the one I should catch. Okay. Om. Nice to see you. You guys are beautiful.